You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. There are a lot of ideas about how to improve schools out in the ether. A new book tackles the issue of leadership in schools. The book is Truth Transforms Education, Framework for New School Leaders. The author is Antoinette Pearson. Dr. Pearson, the title, Truth Transforms Education. Explain that for us.
Right. So first, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be a part of your radio show. I'm very excited to talk about the book. But in terms of the title, Truth Transforms Education, when we tend to think about how we want to transform and restructure educational systems and schools, we really need to think about what is the truth, what's the reality. And sometimes the decisions that are being made are perceptions of truth or individual or group's idea of what truth is and what's best for schools, when in reality we need to actually step into the schools, we need to talk to the people who are boots on the ground and get an understanding of what's actually happening and then base our decisions on there. So if we tackle the issues by looking at and talking to the people who are impacted and who are making the change or should be making the change, then I think we can drill down to the root causes, which is what truth will do, transform education.
I want to talk about a couple of the leadership, types of leadership that you talked about in the book. You said you could be a transactional leader or transformational leader. What do you mean by that? What are you telling your readers?
Right. So when you do some research on leadership, you will come across transformational leadership. You also come across transactional leadership. And essentially, transactional leadership is a leader doing something or leading people in exchange for something else, people following them for in exchange for something else. So higher pay or, you know, position, power, that kind of thing. So they're indeed doing something to receive something back. Transformational leadership talks about and really focuses on that leader and how they motivate, so that charismatic, the one who really is excited and engaging of the staff. But the problem with that is that after a while, that can burn out that leadership because they're just too hyped all the time and really are just doing things and people are following them because of the person. Whereas the other leadership, which I really focus a lot on, servant leadership, really talks about how you can build the capacity in people.
Now, that's servant leadership.
Yes, servant leadership.
So, yeah, you talked about that quite a bit.
Yes, I did. So servant leadership is different in the fact that it focuses on the people that you are leading and how you can build those people, how you can invest in their skill set, how you can help them take that skill set and move towards the goals of the organization. So it's not dependent on one person. It really is a collaborative effort, and it causes individuals to buy into who they are as people and why they decided their purpose, why they decided to become a teacher or an educator. And then that essentially is what motivates them to move forward, not the person, not because of they're going to get something in exchange, but because they believe in who they are and their purpose for doing the work.
Now, there are lots of different kinds of personalities in the education
Absolutely.
Field. It seems to me that you'd have to have at least some humbleness to be a servant leader.
Absolutely. And when you think about servant leadership, it's kind of contradictory because a person said, well, how can you lead but be a servant? Essentially, it is causing that leader to step back and not be the dictator or the one who tells everyone everything to do all the time. It really has to have that leader really has to be humble in the fact that they recognize they don't know everything and that there are individuals who can help and move the organizational forward, and that without those people, there would be no forward progress. And so that leader has to be comfortable in who they are as a person and understand why they're doing what they're doing and not get caught up in perception of what their image is or what people may think about them. But essentially, they have to remember why they're there, and that when we're talking about schools, it's all about the kids and how we're serving them. And so if that means that I have to tap on the shoulder of these teachers because they know a little bit more about the topic than I do, then absolutely. And that says nothing about you as a leader in terms of being weak. It actually shows your strength because you're able to admit your inadequacies, realize that this work can't be done by one person alone.
Now, you've been in education in schools for a couple of decades. You begin the book describing your first job as a principal.
Yes.
What did you walk into at this school and what did you learn from the experience?
Right. So my first experience, I actually was assigned to one school and then I got a phone call, you know, saying that, hey, we're going to move you to another school. My first school, the original school that I received, I did a walkthrough. Everything was looking great and, you know, saw the nice posters and the tidy classrooms and, you know, just really got excited really got excited about what was going to happen. Then I got the phone call and said, hey, we're going to switch you for whatever reason. Don't know. And so, I said, well, let me make this walkthrough to see what it was. And when I pulled up immediately, I was a little disturbed because the grass was growing high. And I said, OK, is this building vacant? Is it closed? You know, has someone occupied it in the past year? So I said, OK, never mind. We'll look past that. But going into the building, I really had a culture shock because it was completely different than that first building I walked into. The walls were dingy, you know, paint was coming off. I walked into the restrooms. There was black paint all over the place. There was graffiti on signs throughout the building and on the mirrors in the restrooms. And then when you go into the main office, there was just clutter everywhere and papers posted all over the glass wall of the office. And, you know, as I went to each classroom and looked in, there was mismatched books, different places, mismatched furniture. Cafeteria had food stains from where they had food fights. And so after I did this walkthrough, I walked to my car and I literally cried. And I said, am I being punished for something? You know, how can I go from a school that I was excited about to now this school that didn't look as if it had been kept up in several years? And so I had to make a decision then. Either I was going to say, this is not for me. This is going to be too hard to turn around and let the powers that be know, hey, I don't want it. But then that could potentially set me up for not receiving additional principalships in the future. Or I could make the decision to say, listen, this is what I've been given. I have to make the best of the situation, and I'm going to make it work. And that's what I decided to do.
And as the book explains, pretty much solo. You didn't have a lot of help. You didn't But I want to get to the question, what did you learn from that experience? What did it teach you?
Right. So from that experience, and this is going through the system from a teacher, you know, from being a sub to a teacher, just being in the K-12 system, I knew working with students and with parents, they have to feel as if the school is a place of learning. It has to look bright and inviting, and it has to feel safe. And so my number one thing was to make the school look like a school and not like a prison, because that's what it looked like to me. It was just drab and it was unkept. And so that was my number one priority. And so in any situation that I go into as a leader, I have to make it feel like a school. So that's one of the lessons that I learned. The other thing was I had to learn how to prioritize and find quick wins with no real support, no mentor. I had to decide what was going to be best for the students at that time to change things around. And so I knew that I had to put some systems in place that was going to cause the students to see that this was going to be a new sheriff in town, that we were going to do some things a little different and communicating that with them openly. So my first couple of months, it was really a struggle because the kids weren't used to that kind of structure, as was evident by the way the building was looking. But once they understood why we were doing what we were doing and having the conversation with the teachers, the students' idea of schooling began to shift as well. And so I knew that second lesson is that clearly communicating with people the purpose for why you're there and what you're doing goes a long way. Most times we do things and we don't necessarily tell people why we're doing it. And that helped me, you know, communicate with the students and the staff. So communicating clearly and having clear goals.
You write that we can never really address some of these failing schools until we address the issue of poverty.
Absolutely.
How do we do that? There's no money.
There is no money, so we say. But one thing that I know is that poverty is real. And the poverty that impacts our children is it causes them not to be able to be ready to receive the education or the learning that we as teachers and educators want them to have. A student is going to find it very difficult to concentrate when they're hungry or they haven't had sleep or they don't know where they're going to sleep the next day. And so it's almost as if they're traumatized. And so we expect them to sit down and to learn and engage when they're just trying to survive. And so we as a city, as community, as businesses, we have to find a way to rally behind school districts to provide that social emotional support, to begin to improve our communities, our neighborhoods, so that our children can get the benefit of it. You know, it's hard for a parent who's trying to make ends meet to really help focus on, you know, educating their student at home when they're just trying to work to pay the bills. And so we have to understand that this is a reality and it's a part of how we're going to change schools. You can't ignore poverty and expect to transform schools. So in order for us to do that, again, we have to, you know, sit down as groups, stakeholders who are vested in education. We need to see what it is that each can bring to the table so that we can begin to address the poverty issue, because schools can't do it by themselves. A teacher can't be the counselor and the social worker and, you know, the human health services department. They can't do all of those things by themselves.
But right now, with the political climate as it is in the state and in the nation, you're not going to see that kind of help increase. So you worked in Detroit Public Schools. The legislature and the governor did a big restructuring of debt for the Detroit Public Schools. There's no doubt that it helped, but there are still failing schools, struggling schools. What will it take to fix Detroit Public Schools if we're not going to see a lot more money?
I think we need to first really take a laser look at how we are allocating our current expenditures and make sure that those expenditures are aligned to the goals that we have indeed set. Sometimes we have spending of programs or personnel, and they don't really align to what it is we said we want to do as a district or as a community or as a city. And so really, you know, taking a look at all of the things that we are purchasing or financing and asking that big question, is this going to benefit, you know, our students academically? And if not, where do we need to move those resources? And sometimes when we if we decide to take a look, and I mean really look at it and not worry about how adults are going to feel if this program is cut or if this position is cut, we really look at, we'll see we're duplicating services as well. And so I think we really need to sit down, look to see where we can redistribute some funding. We definitely have a lot of philanthropic business partners who want to help schools. And so they want to make sure that their investment is truly going towards the classroom and to the students. And so we need to be able to show on our end what it is that we're doing, how we're currently spending our money, and then we can get the additional support. But for me, it's not always about the money, it's how you're using the money. And then not only that, the people you've put in charge of educating students, making sure they've gotten all the training that they need. And that's something that I mentioned in our book. School leaders have to really invest in those people who are in front of those children. Those are the most important people in the building, the teachers and the leaders. And so are we really giving them the support they need in terms of training? You know, and I'm getting on my soapbox, but we can't just beat down teachers and building leaders for decades of things that have happened and now have compounded into just one massive problem and expect for them to fix it on their own, when in actuality, they didn't create the problem on their own. So it needs to be an effort that includes everyone, and it's going to take time. And I think sometimes we don't realize how much time it takes, and we're quick to want to pass judgment if something doesn't work within 6 months or a year and say that it's failing, when in actuality, research says it takes 3 to 5 years for things to really change.
Antoinette Pearson is the author of Truth Transforms Education, A Framework for New School Leaders. Thanks for coming in and talk with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.